Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-11-1106, Zhang v. State of Hawaii, Department of Land and Natural Resources. Arguing for the petitioner, Lila Barbara Kanai. Arguing for the respondent, James E. Halverson, Deputy Attorney General. Argument on the merits.
Well, good morning, Ms. Kanai. Mr. Halverson, are you both ready to proceed? All right, and Ms. Kanai, we will give you you've reserved 15 minutes for rebuttal, so a warning light will come on with 15 minutes to go. Mr. Halverson, we will give you a warning with 5 minutes to go in your argument. Ms. Kanai, if you'd proceed with your argument, please. Oh, please come to the podium, I'm sorry. And pull the mic down towards you. I'm sorry, we're recording our proceedings. So sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. And I'm lower than it, for sure. I'm trying to be very brief this morning because I did incorporate my arguments in my paperwork. And we appreciate that the court has entertained argument in this case. We think it raises very important issues, especially with regard to the first issue, the denial of temporary benefits to my client, because she's been deprived of medical care. She's been deprived of the income assistance that workers' compensation generally provides. And of course, she didn't have the benefit of vocational rehabilitation. She was a motivated person. She was an engineer by trade. And she was already actively engaged in rehabilitation when it was improperly terminated. And fortunately, the appeals board saw its way to reinstate the vocational rehabilitation, but they wouldn't reinstate or restore or make any compensation for all that lost time where she would have collected temporary total disabilities.
What is the legal authority upon which a person entitled to VR is also entitled to TTD?
I searched and searched myself, and I cannot offer you anything on point or anything that necessarily looks at that, even if it doesn't make a decision. What I did notice, though, is that there's many statutory references to both. They seem to go hand in hand. Certainly the philosophy of workers' compensation as a public policy matter would support letting them go hand in hand, especially in a situation like this. We're not asking the court to say in every case, but we're asking the court to say in a case as narrow as this, where you're looking at just a specific past time period and saying, shouldn't indemnification be available as it would be in other contexts, for example? We think that you could narrow that decision or your decision in this case to just that time period. Otherwise, as I tried to explain in the briefing, the worker is left with no resources to either go and obtain a doctor, to go and obtain vocational rehab services, if they aren't without a lot of money. And it seems to me with all the regulation in the statutes regarding vocational rehab, what facilities can and can't do, it's a very structured system in terms of you have to start with your physician, get your certifications in order to get these kinds of benefits. So when the appeals board reinstates one benefit with the other, it just seems like they're creating a gap group, and very unfairly.
What about the lack of medical certification? I know that was a finding that I believe you had challenged, the fact that the board or the LIRAB had found that there was no medical certification, or the medical certification wasn't adequate. But is it your argument that, in fact, the record and the findings that the physicians made were sufficient to establish the necessary information that the certificate would have otherwise provided?
Yes, that's one way of looking at it, and I would support that position. And it also seems to me that at that point, she did not have her medical benefit, that had been terminated. Perhaps I've misunderstood that background.
And what about the issue of the sort of competing physician in opinions? And there's an opinion of Dr. Stretzler, and on the other side, opinions of Dr. Adam Terram and Dr. Reed regarding the diagnosis of dysthymia. Is that something that you're still contesting, or is that a matter that's for the purposes of our argument here today that you're not challenging from the ICA?
We're not challenging it at this time, and in large measure, in order to keep focused on the two issues that were of most importance to us, it seems to me that when my client is able to return to receiving medical care, getting active in vocational rehabilitation again, and hopefully restoring her TTD, the diagnoses at that time will be adequate. And I would remind the board, the state has fought my client on her diagnoses from day one, but it was approved. They never met their burden. They could never overcome the presumption that my client was entitled to medical benefits at the beginning. Then they were just unfairly cut off.
Well, your client actually started VR in 2002, is that correct?
That sounds about right.
And then she stopped when the DCD, or was it LERAB, ordered in 2004 that there would be no further TTD and no further VR. Is that right?
Right.
That's when she stopped, right?
Yes.
So VR was stopped along with TTD.
Correct.
But then VR was reinstituted, correct?
Right.
But TTD was not on the grounds that there, on the sole basis that there was no certification.
Correct.
You're not arguing that TTD and VR go hand in hand pursuant to the regulations?
That's precisely what we're arguing.
Okay, so which regulation provides that? Is it 386 or which statute?
There were references throughout, and I thought I cited it in my briefing, but there isn't one that is strictly our circumstance in terms of retroactivity, and that's why I say I think it's a pretty narrow issue here, because what we're talking about is looking back. My client is very anxious to get back into VR.
So she hasn't gone back to VR yet?
No, because she has no physician to certify it.
Maybe it'd be helpful just to explain exactly what benefits your client is seeking at this point, or what you would ask us to direct that she'd be allowed to receive.
We'd like all the TTD paid retroactive from when it was taken away. And we would want it restored hand in hand along with the Vocational Rehabilitation Award. Once the board said, look, she shouldn't have been taken off vocational rehab, that was improper, and they returned it to that potential benefit, our position is you can't restore that without restoring the TTD.
Would there be, I'm sorry.
Can you explain to me how one can be entitled to VR and at the same time there be a finding that you're no longer entitled to TTD because doesn't there have to be a finding if you're going to cut it off that the person is stabilized and ready to work?
Well, they haven't indicated, there is no finding here that she's stabilized and ready to work. And that's where I think the appellate court maybe misunderstood what they had in front of them, and we're not asking the court to get into that other inquiry. In our case, there is no such finding, and my client actually is interested in vocational rehabilitation. So we're not here really championing the cause of people that say, hey, we think we're stable, we're ready for rating.
You are challenging that, or you're not?
No, we're not.
She wants vocational rehab, not to say that, hey, I'm stable and ready to be rated. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no doctor has yet told her she's stable and ready to be rated. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the state's physicians think that, but her physician did not. And she, of course, knows her own physical condition, and this is my understanding of how she feels about what would be best in for her medically.
So the other issue that you raise on the whether or not her workers' compensation claim was the only basis, the 386-142 claim. I'm wondering, what is the standard that this court applies, what is the standard that DCD or LERAB applies? Is it a objective standard or a subjective standard? In other words, if this court were to rule that she was entitled to work and that the under the Chinese Student Protection Act, she was authorized to work, but the employer thought she wasn't authorized to work, but in fact she was. And it appears that Judge Iona has already ruled, and the state is arguing collateral estoppel on the issue of whether or not Judge Iona already found that the grievances that she filed were not the cause of her dismissal.
Correct. Yeah.
So based on the record, could there have been any other reason other than the purported immigration status? Or the immigration status was the reason given for her termination, correct? The lack of alleged lack of work authorization was the reason given for her termination.
That seems to be what they were
right. Lying. But if the court were to find that she was in fact authorized to work and that it was a mistake, would that take away that reason? In other words, do we view it under an objective or a subjective standard? Is it still that the employer thought she wasn't authorized to work, therefore work could not be the sole reason for her termination? Or is it the reason given was not an actual reason, therefore there is no other reason?
Well, we've argued that it was a ruse, of course. The state has never taken the position that we're entitled to less liability or responsibility because it was, let's say, an innocent mistake. And I don't think there's any documentation or evidence in this case supporting the theory of an innocent mistake here. I mean, everything points to, misuse of paperwork by the state in order to obtain a certain result, and that is to terminate my client. So I think under the facts of our case, I'm not sure you have to reach the question you're raising because I don't think there is factual evidence to support anything other than just saying, it was a wrongful termination. Now, I certainly don't rule out an occasion that another case could raise facts where there was an innocent termination. But I don't think that's what we have here. So, in my view, the kind of case we have here where it really is retaliatory type of thing, it just seems to me that the court, normally for factual findings, of course, it's a pretty high standard, but regardless, I think it's just a question of almost a right-wrong situation.
What is the remedy your client is seeking? Reinstatement of TTD and remand on and just basically reinstatement of TTD and affirmance on the VR, is that right?
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear this.
Affirmance on the vocational rehabilitation and reinstatement of TTD retroactively to the date it was cut off.
Correct.
Yes. And the basis for the reinstatement, if you're not challenging the finding that there was substantial evidence not showing a work relatedness, what is the basis for your challenge?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite
catch your question. You're asking this court to reinstate the TTD for that period, and I'm asking what is the legal basis for that if you're not challenging the finding as to work relatedness?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by the finding as to work relatedness.
Well, you didn't challenge the work relatedness as to the finding crediting Dr. Stressler's opinion, and that department overcame the statutory presumption. Is that correct? You're not challenging it.
And I apologize again. I'm not quite clear what you're getting at. Our position is that the whole statutory scheme would support VR and TTD going hand in hand, at least on the facts of this case. Regardless of how the state's doctors came down with their particular diagnoses and so forth.
Actually, the LERAB had actually ruled, I believe, back in 2011 that the board applied the presumption, finding of fact 41, the board applied the presumption and finds that employer has not presented substantial evidence that your client's work injury did not include the diagnoses of major depression and adjustment disorder. So therefore, LERAB found that, based on the presumption, your client did have diagnoses of major depression and adjustment disorder due to the work injury, correct?
Yeah, and it was okay. Just that dangling.
It was just the dysthymia that
disagreement.
But you think that that is not really relevant to the decision in this case because of the finding of relatedness of major depression and
exactly. Thank you.
Okay.
And again, with regard to the discharge or whether the discharge was solely related to her filing a claim, what is the relief you seek with regard to that?
I think the statute permits her reinstatement at that employment.
Is that the relief that is being sought?
Whether that would be a good idea ultimately is, you know, remains to be seen. But I think, too, some of it will turn on what vocational rehab results we get.
Okay, thank you. Any no further questions at this point, then we'll hear from Mr. Halverson, and you'll have time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I, too, will try to be very brief. Let me address first the issue, the second issue, that is the termination by reason of the immigration status. We just want to point out two things. I'm not even going to try to summarize the record in this case. It's been going on for 21 years. But I just want to make a couple points with regard to the discharge. One is that when Ms. Jang was terminated, the first thing she did was file a lawsuit, and what she claimed was the reason she was terminated was discrimination. It had nothing to do with workers' comp. We went through an entire lawsuit. My colleague Gary Hines was the attorney who did that case. And
is there a civil right to action? I thought that the workers' compensation statutory administrative remedy would be the exclusive remedy with respect to any claim based on the workers' compensation statute.
Not entirely. That is certainly a defense that we would raise in certain civil rights cases in terms of the nature of the injury and the damages, but that doesn't preclude somebody being able to bring a civil rights lawsuit.
Are you prepared to go that far, that an employee can sue the state alleging workers' compensation retaliation as a civil rights violation?
Oh, no, I'm not. My point here is that the reason she gave in the lawsuit for her termination was discrimination, a completely different concept, and we prevailed on that. It was found that we did not.
National origin discrimination.
Right.
Right.
And so
but you did move in limine to exclude any reference to immigration matters, correct? And that motion was granted?
That I don't recall. I wasn't involved in the case. But what I'm saying is that was her first move, was to say, I was terminated because of discrimination. She didn't prevail on that. So the second move is, I was terminated because of retaliation for filing a workers' comp claim. And the second point I want to make on in regard to that, because you mentioned, is it an objective or a subjective standard? The one fact that I want to point out in this case with regard to the Immigration Naturalization Service issue is 5 months after she was terminated, the employer received a warning letter from INS. That's reflected in both the LIRAB decision as well as in the record.
And after she was terminated, didn't she also present a work authorization form showing
no,
that she was
did
actually
not.
Authorized?
She presented other forms to the employer, but they weren't work authorization forms.
What is the state's position at this time? Was she or was she not authorized to work at the time she was terminated?
She was not. According to what INS had told us.
When did INS say that?
They said that in the warning letter.
After she was terminated.
After when? She was term- It's not, I, in reviewing, preparing for this, I tried to track down some material that we had.
Wasn't she actually authorized to work pursuant to the Chinese Student Protection Act?
That expired in January 1994.
No, that was the executive order that expired. The Chinese Student Protection Act was actually passed on October 9th, 1992. And it was actually before that that the state was looking into getting an H-1B visa.
Right.
But after the Chinese Student Protection Act was actually passed and she submitted her adjustment status, under the law, she was already deemed to have permanent resident status, was she not?
Not according to our contacts with INS. It may have been a mistake on the part of DLNR, and it may have been an error on the part of INS.
But there's something in the record to show there were contacts before her termination? You've talked about the
letter. We tried to check on that yesterday or this last week. I have some information that there were personal contacts between DLNR and INS, but I can't find them in the record. But I do have the warning letter that was issued. It's dated December 13th, 1994, and apparently received by DLNR in 1995, January 23rd, signed by Robert Olson, Assistant District Director, Investigations. So, as late as January 1995, we have documentation from INS, and it's in the record, it's reflected in the LIRAB decision, that specifically says we're in violation. Now, INS may be in error as well. I've been working in government long enough to know that even well-meaning bureaucrats can make mistakes, especially with regard to complex issues like...
Wasn't that issue with respect to the fact that they didn't have a signature on verifying that the extension of her driver's license?
Well, what it says is the respondent failed to ensure that Juliana Jang, listed in paragraph A, properly completed section 1 of the employment eligibility verification form, form I-9. And then they went on to say that we're charged with violation of various U.S. statutes.
Sorry, what would be the remedy on this claim? First of all, it's... what is the state's position about what potential remedies exist or what remedies might be granted if we were to find that, in fact, the board clearly erred with regard to whether the basis for termination?
Well, I go back to my initial position or our initial position, which is Ms. Jang has the burden of showing that this was not the sole reason for for filing a workers' compensation claim was the sole reason for her termination. And clearly not.
Doesn't the record reflect that on August 10th of 1994, Zhang provided DLNR with a DOJ work authorization card valid until May of 1997 and requested that the DLNR reinstate her?
I believe that's her position, but as I said, something after August from INS saying we're in violation. I don't know what a departmental personnel officer in the state of Hawaii is supposed to do when they're getting claims and forms from the employee, and yet the officials are saying you're in violation. But I go back to, I believe that this court, in this case, is limited to making a determination of whether or not the termination of Ms. Jang was solely based upon her filing a workers' compensation claim. And I would argue that she has not produced evidence to that effect.
So you would say that it's basically a subjective test, that the intent of the employer matters? In other words, even if there was no basis to terminate her based on immigration status, the fact that they thought there was such a basis is what matters.
Well, it's more than I think that they just thought that. I think that they thought that based upon evidence that's been presented to them.
Well, based on the record, as of July 22nd, she had provided them with her application, her I-485 adjustment of status application, with a letter back from the INS saying that her petition was still pending. Under the law, it's very clear that then at that point she already has permanent resident status.
And again, that's going to the issue of whether or not INS was correct in January 1995 when they said we're in violation.
I want to go back to the Chief Justice's question that he last asked, which I don't think he quite answered, and that is, if in fact there was a mistake made, whether intentionally or innocently, regarding her immigration status, what would be the remedy?
Quite honestly, Your Honor, I'm not sure at this point. I think Ms. Kanai has hit on it. Whether or not she could come back to work is problematic. And if I may go back to the first part of the argument, and that is, we've got medical evaluations that indicate that she may not be able to come back to her old job.
Besides which, she's been out of engineering for 21 years now.
Yeah, as far as I know, she's never been employed. And like I say, the medical evaluations indicate that her pre-existing personality disorders may make it impossible for her to return to an engineering job. I avoided answering your question again, but I'm not sure what the remedy is. Obviously, one possible remedy is she'd be reinstated if she can.
Are there not timeliness requirements for raising an issue like this? I mean, we're 20 years after the fact, and we're litigating what happened with regard to her termination, as opposed to the issues that relate to her current condition and treatment. And were those issues asserted by the employer? You understand my question? Why are we litigating? Why are there timeliness requirements to bringing a claim of this point of this type? Because we're here, I guess when it was before the LIRAB, 2011, so 15 years after the fact.
Well, I mean,
or are you not
I,
aware?
I think that I'm not going to argue that Ms. Chang didn't raise the issue about her immigration matters, and that was the a ruse at the time. I wouldn't argue that.
These matters have been raised throughout the proceedings, and for whatever reason, it's only now that they're being brought to this level. I'm just trying to understand.
Normally,
things like this get litigated closer to the time in which they occur, but you're not sure why that is.
I think she raised these issues in front of LIRAB, and I think she raised these issues in front of the ICA. And I'm not saying that I just.
You're not suggesting she can't raise them at this time. All right.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
But let me go back to what I started to talk about is in the first issue, the issue with regard to VR and TTD. I think we need to start with Dr. Strelzer's report. In his report, and the finding of the LIRAB was that she had two work-related psychological conditions that were in remission by the time Dr. Strelzer did his evaluation in 2002. But he also indicated that she had significant personality disorders. And all of the doctors in this case are consistent in finding that.
But the LIRAB did find that the employer did not overcome the burden to disestablish major depression and adjustment disorder, correct?
Right. But
so therefore, I do want to ask the question that was asking Ms. Kanai with respect to the interrelationship between VR and TTD. You say, the state says in its answering brief, I believe, that Let's see. I think you conceded, did you not, that TTD, if she is, gets VR, she gets TTD. You say on page 22, further, since claimant was, in fact, not in a vocational rehabilitation plan or program during this period of time, she is not entitled to temporary total disability benefits. That's conversely, correct. It seems like you're saying that if she had been entitled to or was in VR, she would have been entitled to TTD.
Yes.
So you are conceding that if she's entitled to VR, she's entitled to TTD.
Well, not if she's entitled to VR, if she's in VR.
But the problem was that she was in it, but she was improperly terminated.
I don't believe that's in the record. I think
it's
that
not?
Was
no. I thought it was cut off in 2004.
No, I don't believe she was in VR at that point. I think she had ceased VR for other reasons.
I thought it was based on a DCD decision in July of 2004 that there's no further TTD and no further vocational rehabilitation service. And that's what terminated the VR.
No, I believe she had already terminated her. I believe her VR, she started her VR in 2002. And I believe for other reasons her VR had ended. What they were simply ruling was that she's not entitled to any additional VR. And that was overturned by LIRAB, says no, she could get additional VR. And I want to make it also clear that the LIRAB decision in 2011 also said she's entitled to additional medical care.
Can you get VR without TTD? Can VR be ordered without TTD?
A person can go ahead and
voluntarily can it be ordered
get VR
without,
and then apply to the employer to get to TTD to accompany it, and that would happen. But we've got nothing in the record indicates she's attempted to get VR since the LIRAB decision, which allowed her to have additional VR. We've got absolutely nothing in the record to indicate that she's attempted to get VR, which could have triggered TTD. And I'm not saying that we wouldn't contest that, because if she's getting if she wants to get VR, it's going to have to be VR for the work-related injuries.
Mr. Halverson, how would you frame the issue with regard to TTD? We have a couple of different issues rattling around, the question of whether the certification was correct or not, the question of whether Dr. Stretzler, the board, I guess, somehow missed the call in crediting Dr. Stretzler versus the other doctors. How exactly would you frame this issue, and what's the state's position?
I would say it's this. You can get TTD in one of two ways. If you apply for VR, get admitted into a VR program, and submit that report to the employer, and if the VR is properly related to a work-related injury, the person is going to get TTD. In addition to that, a person can get TTD regardless of VR, if they've got disability certifications. In this case, we have no proper disability certifications, and I want to make it clear, we're not talking about technicalities. We're not talking about somebody just didn't fill out the form right or failed to sign off on some insignificant detail. In this case, what we have is there's no indication from any of the doctors that she's got a disability for a certain period of time. The closest thing we have is Dr. Adam Terum putting in a treatment program. The problem with her treatment program is she doesn't distinguish what the treatment program, what part of it is related to her work-related injuries and what part is related to her pre-existing psychological conditions.
Is that a failure of the doctor that should be accredited to the patient? I mean, shouldn't LIRAB say, hey, or the director say, hey, this is incomplete, let's get it done correctly? Should she be penalized in that way?
Well, the flip side of that is we've got clear evidence that the personality disorder is overriding almost everything. The other two conditions that are attributable to work are both in remission. And so Dr. Schelzer points out in his report that Dr. Adam Tarum's treatment of the claimant in this case is perfectly appropriate for her personality disorder, not for any other psychological condition. So taken together, Dr. Strelzer's report and Dr. Adam Tarum's treatment plan, this would not qualify for TTD at that point. Plus, there's no real disability determination by the doctor. She's talking about a treatment plan, but not a disability.
Do we know that's the reason why LIRAB said it was the certificate was not sufficient? I mean, that's your thoughts on it, correct? I mean, the findings doesn't the findings just say that they're insufficient?
Yeah, let me just double check.
If you look at the, just following up on Justice Pollack's question, I think it's findings of fact 47 and 48.
Yes.
There are no medical certifications. The claimant was temporarily and totally disabled as a result of the work injury for the period after May 5. The board finds, therefore, no evidence that claimant was temporarily and totally disabled. Doesn't that sound like the board is relying on the form of the certification as opposed to the substance of what might be underlying?
Well, not really, because as I say, the treatment plan by Dr. Adam Tarum is just that, a treatment plan. She's not certifying that there's a person.
What is the date of the treatment plan? What year?
I think it's in Libret Finding of Fact 37, August 9, 2005.
Okay, so the state's position is that if an employer prevails in before the DCD in getting TTD and VR terminated, and it takes LIRAB, and as a result and medical care terminated on the grounds that she an employee has returned to pre-work injury status. And the employee is therefore unable to continue medical care, and then it takes 7 years for LIRAB to rule that she is entitled to TTD, and even though she was entitled to medical care and TTD, we're to assume that during that intervening time period, she was able to work. And her temporary total disability did not continue, despite a treatment plan, that she was actually able to work.
No, we're not making that argument. And the reason is this. First of all, LIRAB did not restore her to TTD. Simply said she could go ahead and get VR.
Oh, okay.
And she get medical care.
Right.
So if she goes to VR and she gets admitted to VR, and there's a report made to the employer, there's a possibility she's going to get TTD that route.
But they're not saying she's entitled to TTD in the future as a part of the VR. They didn't say that for the future.
They didn't specifically say that, but that's what I would say would happen is if she gets VR, and the VR is related to a work related injury, that she would get TTD. But as I said, we've got no evidence at all that she's made any effort to get VR. But the second thing,
VR. Mr. Halverson pays for the VR. Does the employer pay for the
yes.
VR?
Yes.
So there was no obstacle for her to enroll in VR?
The only obstacle I know of is whether or not she can show that VR is going to be related to her work injury.
But you said that LIRAB had already authorized her.
Yes, it also authorized her to get further medical care.
So there was, so Ms. Kanai said she didn't have the, she couldn't get the certification because she couldn't afford to go to the doctor.
I don't know what prevents her from doing that. I don't know what prevents her from going out and getting VR. But whether or not we're going to pay for it, it's going to have to be VRs related to her work-related injury. And I want to go back to something else about, we're not saying that she was able to work. In fact, Dr. Strelzer and the other doctors indicate that she's got severe psychological personality disorders that may prevent her from going back to work, especially as an engineer.
Your physicians concede that she's not able to work.
Yeah, but it's not because of a work-related injury.
Right, but then LIRAB found and concluded that there was, at least partially at least, due to a work-related injury.
Well, it found that they found the employer had not overcome the presumption with regard to two psychological conditions, both of which were in remission, or one was resolved and one was in remission, I think is the way they...
So you're basically conceding she was unable to work, is that correct?
Yes, but not because of work-related injury.
But LIRAB found that she does have a work-related injury.
She did have a work-related injury. It's in remission.
If LIRAB authorized voc rehab and medical care, shouldn't she be entitled to do that? Isn't that at least an implication that it's work-related? You make it sound as if she can go to voc rehab, but then she has to prove all over again that it's necessary because of injury-related or job-related.
Well, I think that's one of the complexities of this case, is that she's got, this is not just work-related injury. If it's just a work-related injury, this is a much easier, you know, kind of analysis to do. But in this case...
If LIRAB says she's entitled to it, isn't there an implication that it's related, if she's entitled to it?
Well, let's be clear on how LIRAB phrased this. Let's go first to the medical care. It says she may be entitled to future medical care. And that's not unusual for LIRAB to say that, because we have lots of people who have injuries that appear to be in remission or to have resolved or whatever, but they can have a relapse. And unless there's an intervening event.
Well, what did they say about voc rehab? They didn't say she may be entitled to voc rehab. Did they say she was entitled to voc rehab?
I'd have to double check, but I think you're right. I think it just says that she's eligible for it. Let me see.
The board finds, therefore, that Zhang is entitled.
That's right. Finding fact 46.
Yeah.
So the denial of TTD is based on a finding of remission. Is that she's in remission? Is that the conclusion that LIRAB is making implicitly or something? Is that your conclusion?
Well, I believe that what they're saying, is the doctor's report indicates that there's her work-related injuries are in remission, and there are no certifications of any disability.
And that, I think, is my concern, is to say there are no medical certifications, and my concern is that based upon some procedural failure? Because when you say there are no, it's not like it's deficient or the evidence is greater from the employer's doctors or something like that. Just as there's no medical, and we read you those two findings that Chief Justice did, and then there's another finding, which is conclusion of law 4, where it says the board concludes that claimant was not entitled to temporary total disability benefits after May 2004 for lack of disability certification. So it seems like the entire finding is resting upon some sort of deficiency, procedural or something, that's not identified.
Well, no, I think it is identified. There's no... Despite the fact that there are a number of doctors involved in this case, none of them are saying that she's disabled as a result of a work-related injury.
But that's odd language to say no. Rather, I mean, it means something. It may mean what you're saying, but it certainly doesn't seem, at least, I guess I don't see that on the face of it. It sounds like to me that they're just saying it's deficient for whatever reason.
Well, the way the workers' comp system works, in order for somebody to get wage replacement, they need to have a certification from a doctor that they're totally disabled as a result of a work-related injury.
What do you mean a certification? Is that word utilized in the statutes or the regs?
I believe it is.
Sorry.
I can't cite you to that right now.
Well, finding of fact 48 does say the board finds no evidence that Zhang was temporarily and totally disabled. So it doesn't sound like there was no evidence that she was, therefore that's why there's no certification. It sounds like there's no certification, that's why they make the finding. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think you're saying the same thing. I mean, there, somewhere along the line, the system requires that there be something from the doctor that certifies that they're totally disabled because of a work-related injury.
Mr. Halverson, are you aware that there are cases in the ICA, and that, in fact, I think this issue has come up to us and is pending in another matter, regarding the adequacy of what's on the WC2 form? Are you familiar with those cases, and can you help relate what happened here to the issues as set forth in those cases? I believe it's the Custino versus Department of Transportation case and Alion versus Urban Management are issues in which this question of what's in the form has come up. Are you familiar with that issue, and is that what we're talking about here, or is it what I'm getting from you is you think this is different because rather than just some deficiency in the way the form is filled out, and I'm not asking you to concede anything on those cases, but that here you think there's a substantive issue and not just a matter of what's actually placed on the form.
I'm familiar with the Chalene Aileon case. I have that in front of me. I believe that case stands for the proposition that the ICA says, no, you have to look at the merits of the issue on the certification of disability. And I think that's exactly what the LIRAB did in this case. I don't think they were practicing form over substance or looking at technicalities.
Well, if they looked at the merits, then how could they discount your own doctor's opinion that she was unable to work, as well as her treating physician's opinion that she was unable to work?
Our physician is not saying she's unable to work because of her work-related injury. He's saying she's unable to work because of her pre-existing psychological condition.
He said she's unable to work because she has these psychological issues which have nothing to do with the work, or if they did, she's already returned to pre-work status. LIRAB disagreed and said that part of it was related to her work, correct?
No, I don't agree with that.
They didn't say that you didn't overcome the presumption regarding major depression and adjustment disorder?
No, I agree that they said we did not overcome the presumption, but if we had overcome the presumption, we would not have a workers' comp case at all.
Right.
But in this particular case, at the time that Dr. Streltzer evaluated her, the work-related injuries were in remission.
So the two conditions, in Streltzer's opinion, the two conditions that were work-related, major depression and adjustment disorder, were in remission.
That's correct.
A third condition, dysthymia, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, he believed was not work-related. And that was the dispute between he and the treating physician, and that's what the LIRAB sided with him on. Is that what happened here?
That's what I believe occurred, okay. And that's what was upheld by ICA.
Okay. And what is the inquiry? Is that a question of whether how does that inquiry or how does that dispute relate to the legal issues that needed to be decided by the board? In other words, is this a termination of TTD? Is it finding that she's stable? Or what exactly, how would you relate that to the framework of what the board needs to be doing in order to decide this case legally?
I'll try to.
No, just explain why is that correct legally? Okay, that's assuming if we were to agree that the board had in its power the ability to tread at one dock over the one doctor over the other, why does that end this case as a matter of law?
Well, first of all, I believe that the LIRAB, which of course, as you know, is a appellate body, but it reviews their cases de novo. So the doctors appeared in front of in front of LIRAB and testified. So because it's a trial de novo, they're not just an appellate body; they're a trial court of sorts, and they're certainly entitled in that capacity to make credibility decisions. And I believe that's what they did in this case. They credited Dr. Strelzer's ultimate opinion over the treating physicians and the other physicians involved.
And we're in a sense, we're guessing. You may very well be correct, but for an appellate court, we're guessing at the basis. When they say that it's that, they're fine because our word in the manner that they are, we're guessing at their basis. They're not accredited. When they say no medical certifications, it could be based on weight or it could be based on some procedural failure.
I believe it's based on weight, and because the analysis of LIRAB, when they're looking at the other doctors, they're pointing out that there's not a lot of inconsistency between Dr. Strelzer and the other doctors. They all basically track. There's slight differences, but they basically track on the overall personality disorder diagnosis as well as the work-related anxiety disorder and depression.
Was this a proceeding to terminate her TTD benefits? And if so, are the relevant tests, whether she's able to resume work, whether she's stable, is that what's going on here? Is that what the board is trying to decide, or what?
I think DCD is the one that terminated the benefits. This was a de novo hearing on whether or not that termination was correct, and they upheld the DCD.
Well,
it is a termination, and they do have to satisfy those two criteria. That she's stable, and she can work again. Is that?
No, I don't believe that's the standard. I believe that what they're looking at is whether or not she is totally, temporarily, totally disabled as a result of her work injury. And again, I go back to what complicates this case is she's got a personality disorder that pervades everything. She may never be able to go back to work because of her personality disorder.
But she had been getting TTD previously, prior to this period.
Up until middle of 2004.
And why doesn't that statute then apply? That either she's resumed working or she's stable on camera. There's some job for her.
I think it's because Dr. Strelzer's report clarifies her situation and ascribes to, what part of the employer's responsibility is attributable to the work-related injuries and what's not.
Well, let me ask you this. In a situation as this, if your argument is she is not able to work, but it's not related to a work-related injury, does the claimant never get rated then? How does it,
I would think that would be the logical next step for the claimant in this case if, based upon the medical evidence that's out there, is that she should go get rated.
So a claimant can get rated even though the claimant is not able to go back to work. The reason the claimant is not being able to go back to work is not job related?
Well, specifically...
I guess that makes sense.
Specifically, the LIRAB addressed PPD. I can't remember where.
Wouldn't you be moving to have her rated then?
I think that might be appropriate. But I believe both the ICA and the LIRAB, can't find her exact, but they both said that the director still has jurisdiction over the issues of PTD or PPD. And so, you know, if, but again, such a rating would have to be related to the work-related injuries. And if the overriding cause of her inability, of her disability, is her pre-existing personality disorder, it might be only partial permanent disability.
Anything further from the court?
Thank you, sorry, Mr. Halverson, if you want to wrap up.
No, I just grossly exceeded my time, and I apologize.
No, you can wrap up. We were asking you questions during that time you reserved, so if you want to very briefly wrap up your position, you may.
No, I think we've exhausted your patience. Thank you very much.
Not at all, but Ms. Kanai, your rebuttal.
I'm sorry, we
need your mic right in front because we record our proceedings.
I'm so sorry. You folks did raise the issue of, the INS notice and what if there was like an innocent mistake on the part of an employer. And I just want to remind the court that the documentation that the state decided to include in the record was that initially they got a warning notice, and all it said was, and I saw that the court grasped this, that warning notice was directed to the state basically saying you need to fill the form out, it's not complete. It doesn't say anything about this person isn't entitled to work. It was asking the employer to do the paperwork correctly. I think part of that
was moment. That warning notice necessary, however, if she was actually authorized to work pursuant to the Chinese Student Protection Act?
I don't know, but I can certainly understand that paperwork ought to be done correctly, whether or not, you know, you're entitled to work. I mean, if the INS has extra time to send those notices so everyone does perfect paperwork, I have no complaint with that. But then it was months and months later that out of the blue, the INS then sent a fuller document to the employer. And this one spoke to the question of whether she would be working there. And I just found it strange because so many months went by and the employee had already been terminated. So I don't think these are the best facts for the court to be examining the issue of, you know, was there an innocent mistake? Which is a whole different discussion than whether my claimant believes that a lot of it was a conspiracy and a ruse. And I think the documents do support that because it just seems odd that there wouldn't be follow-up. First of all, the state's a major employer. So why they wouldn't take care of their paperwork? Because they've already terminated her. They got what they wanted. They're done with her. And it would have been courteous if they wrote the INS a letter, but as you noticed, they didn't need to. They were waiting for the INS to write them a letter saying, well, then you can't keep her on board. The paperwork isn't correct. So what also is interesting on that later notice that the INS sent, the second one that the state did provide us in the record, they didn't give us a complete copy. They only gave us pages 1 and 2. So I'd be very curious what's on the remainder of that document. And I think that was the main point I wish to address at this time. Thank you.
Was she in a temporary position?
As I understood it, it was contractual and it renewed on an annual type
right.
of basis.
Right. So is there anything that would have precluded the employer from not continuing her past September 30th? Assuming that she had been there and stayed until September 30th of 1994.
I can't speak to that because I don't have inside information, but my understanding is that the contracts were being renewed, so to speak. It's not as though funding stopped and everybody lost that contract. I don't think that's what we're looking at in this case.
And everyone else that was in the same position as her got continued.
I don't know how many others were, but I have been told that others didn't lose the contract, let's put it that way. She was the only one that wasn't renewed. That they needed these engineers. They were happy to renew these contracts. And as you could see from the record, over the years they were renewing her in any event. So it wasn't that her work wasn't satisfactory.
Well, anything further?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much to both of our counsel here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.